passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We are live. It is 2:13 a.m. Eastern time. John Pollock waiting. WrestleMania night one. Tonight has breezed by. Way is full of so much energy. If you are all basking in the glory of a new era of WWE, dude, Wei Ting is past it, okay? He's done with this WWE in general. The man is at the very end of his rope, and I have coaxed him into doing this post-show at 2:15 in the morning. Wei, how are you?
Then, now, forever, forever. Forever. Emphasis on forever. This has been a very long day, as all these days have been. You know, it's been 5 years since we've done a WrestleMania weekend.
It's probably going to be 5 years before we do another one.
If not 50. It's so much harder to do this job when we're trying to get from A to B, trying to, you know, navigate outside of a 72,000 attendance full stadium back to our hotel to record the show like this. It just zaps the energy out of you. But you know what? This is the experience that I think people want to see us document anyway. You know, not just us talking about the show, but just navigating. So, hey, it's 2:15 a.m. Some of you wrestling fans are still up right now. Some of you might be listening in the morning. Thank you for making the time wherever you are. And hello, the people that are here in the chat room.
Yeah, we're going to take you through our experience live at WrestleMania 40, night one, where we were there. And got out of the stadium at 11:15 p.m. Eastern time and walked into our hotel room door.
Is that so true though? Because like 11:15, isn't it? Like when did the show end? Show ended at like 11, right?
I think just after 11.
Just after 11, and then we had to wait.
That's true. They couldn't let us leave. So
we were in the press box.
So we arrived at the stadium. Checked in where the media check-in was and got our credentials, and you got one of two media passes. You either got the press box badge or you got press box only badge. Yes. If you got the dreaded yellow press box only badge, which Wei and I were bestowed, that meant you did not have access to the press conference after. So Wei and I were not able to go to the press conference. And thus, we thought, okay, we're just going to leave. But we had to wait for about 15, 20 minutes to get out after the show. We make our Wei out. And then a very good pal of ours was able to offer us a ride back to our hotel. I would say driving, 20, 25 minutes?
So on Uber, it said, I mean, you can never trust, Apple Maps or Google Maps. It says like, normally it's a 15-minute drive.
15-minute drive. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. We got to the parking lot at Lincoln Financial Field. I want to say we were in that parking lot for easily 90 minutes.
It's brutal.
Man. Wei fell asleep in the back seat. I watched the press conference. And we just did not move. I'm not saying we were crawling.
We were in the parked spot.
Literally in park, not moving. And life just stood still for those entire 90 minutes. We then finally had motion that was a welcome change as we did nothing, just sitting there for that amount of time. And then we're moving, we're going, and we arrive. We realize the wrong address had been punched in.
There are a few zeros added into the GPS.
We got to 1900 of our very long street that we apparently are staying on.
You know, very easy a mistake to make. It's nobody's fault.
Yeah. You know? So anyway, the silver lining, I really wanted to go to the press conference. I tried to maneuver my way into the press conference. It was not happening. And I was like, okay, well, the silver lining is we're going to get home earlier. We can do the show. And while we're still full of energy, and then this commute from hell just tacked on nearly 3 hours that I was not expecting. And the end result is Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns are going back for night two. I don't think Wei Ting is.
No, I think my story finishes on night one. I'm done. Like, what incentive do I have, you know, to go there and watch the show from, like, you know, I'm essentially watching on a monitor when I'm there anyway. You know, why can't I do that from the comfort of my own Airbnb?
Yeah, we're going to sound. Okay,
fleeing the city of Philadelphia.
Absolutely the speed you need at 2:20 in the morning on a motorcycle. So that is Sunday. We're going to focus on today. Wei, what was your just the vibe you got of the stadium, of what you got to experience? Usually Wei is the more adventurous of the two of us and ventures out into the stadium proper. You did not have that type of access at this one, and we were pretty much confined to a enclosed media section. When you're in some of these football stadiums where it's colder climates, you're not going to have an open air situation. It's enclosed, which comes with problems because little things you take for granted, like, will there be monitors with sound? Will those monitors, if they get sound, be in sync with what's happening in front of you? Yeah. we had plenty of issues. It was manageable. It was tolerable, but where you were kind of stuck. Did you have any?
So again, that's the other thing too, is I think people get the impression like, oh, you're going down to the show. You know, you're going to sit down in the audience and all that. And it's not really the case. I mean, we're in the press box, which is high up. You know, we're like pretty much like towards the top of the building. And, you know, there are desks prepared for people to work at. And we're enclosed behind glass. And so it's really, we're essentially separated from the crowd. And so in wrestling, if you don't really hear the crowd, it's hard to really kind of judge. If you don't hear anything, it's kind of really hard to judge the quality of the show. So they had the show on the monitors, but they, at least to start, had no sound coming from these monitors whatsoever. So we couldn't really do our job, you know, at least ours, in trying to create the quality of the show. So that was an issue. And even for a portion, they didn't even have like the proper feed up. Like, we were getting like the in arena feed. So a good chunk of, like, you know, the early portion, but they solved that eventually. And you know what? It was actually just kind of nice. Like, we're sitting up there. I'm essentially watching with like a really loud speaker and watching, but it was no different than watching at home.
Yeah. I mean, I'm torn at the moment about going back.
Whatever. Like, I
don't know if I should.
Why not?
Man,
we are in a very busy street here in Philadelphia, but anyway.
Oh, we got screaming too. Oh, okay. Look at that.
Okay. Honking. Wow.
A lot of screaming we encountered today. Got to experience for the first time the SEPTA. The subway system?
Yeah. I'm already well familiar with the SEPTA.
Yeah.
The very convenient system. Just, I would say, avoid going past midnight if you can. And even at 5:30 in the afternoon, it can be a bit.
Dude was having a bad day.
Right. Yeah. But you know, maybe we've spoken enough about our trip. You know, these were very difficult tickets to get. So, you know, in many ways, I think, we were just grateful to be admitted in. What do you think about the vibe outside of the building and everything?
I was a little surprised because we had to wait outside for a little bit of time. And did you notice, like, the draft, like the wind?
Yes, I did. Yeah, it was fucking cold outside.
It was pretty cold. And I thought, because so many of the people consuming WrestleMania are not in the stadium, they're at home. Yeah. I thought it would have been a nice addition to the broadcast if Michael Cole conveyed how cold it was.
Well, listen, in that case, I felt like it was really necessary. And this was where I was really grateful that we were enclosed in glass, you know. In exchange for sand, we got the protection of warmth, because I couldn't have imagined people staying out there for that long.
It would not have been an enjoyable experience for that amount of hours in like that cold. Like, not to say like it wasn't snowing, but it was – it was uncomfortable, and enough that it was a big part of the broadcast. Mm-hmm. And they made this into like a pseudo, like they were doing weather updates like every half hour.
They had a little graphic.
Oh, yeah.
Indicating, you know, any temperatures between 52 to 50 Fahrenheit, which I mean,
you had Becky Lynch performing with a fever on top of it. I mean, that had to have been a miserable experience of being sick and you're in the cold.
Yeah. But we did get a question directed towards either Bianca, Jade, or Naomi. And I forget one of the three answered that you don't even really feel it because of the adrenaline, or at least in their case. So I'm sure when you're running around and being active as they are, maybe it didn't bother them as much.
Well, let's get into the show. We are going to have a bit of a condensed review as we go through things. And if we have some time, we'll get to some super chats as well. But the kickoff panel, I mean, this was the ultimate rib if there was one. Jackie Redmond, CM Punk, Big E, and Wade Barrett were doing the two-hour kickoff show. So they were stationed outside of the stadium for 2 hours to talk. You had Jackie Redmond, who was in a winter jacket. The other three were just in their suits and had to have been freezing out there for that amount of time. Here's Phil Brooks with his torn biceps, and he's anyway, but they were out there, didn't focus a few interviews backstage, but no matches, just kind of a kickoff.
I couldn't hear a thing, so I'll take your word for it.
Our announcers for the night are Michael Cole, Pat McAfee, and Corey Graves. And
worth noting, there's a new signature.
Yes, there was an opening signature. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you caught it at the end. There was also a closing signature with Paul Levesque's voice. And I will say, I think we will look back at this as sort of Paul Levesque's like WrestleMania 1, for lack of a better comparison. This was all positioned as the start, even though he has been their chief content officer for as long as he has at this point. This was positioned as this was the full transfer of creative power. Vince McMahon is gone. This is Paul Levesque's vision, and it's Paul Levesque on the signature. It's Paul Levesque kicking things off. It is... this is the launch of the Paul Levesque era, and that was evident with Paul Heyman's speech at the Hall of Fame. Like, this whole weekend, a huge part of it was our big, hard launch of this new direction.
I think if you ask them, I mean, I think there's at least maybe room to question whether or not the Paul Heyman mentions were intentional. According to Heyman, it was not. He was going against instruction by putting the focus on Paul Levesque. But I will say what does feel very intentional is having Paul Levesque himself be the person voicing this signature. He is essentially the voice of God saying now, then, now, forever, presumably before every single broadcast. So it's not like he's hiding. He's been a very public facing leader throughout his entire tenure through NXT, every finger pointing photo available out there. He's always seemed like somebody who really wants you to know that he is the person responsible creatively for all this.
Yeah, it was Paul Levesque coming out to the crowd. Welcome to a new time. Welcome to a new era. And that's how the show began, and the new signature we had,
and the opening with Meek Mill, which unfortunately I can't really comment on, didn't really hear it, but I'm assuming
the audio was Meek in the press box. But then we did get the audio finally going through. So kicking things off, first of all, we had the introduction of the Prime sponsorship.
Yes.
And I'll say for this, for all the concerns people had, and I was not one of them about, oh my God, a logo on the ring. I thought it was pretty unintrusive in terms of this logo just there on the middle. Mm-hmm. No one slipped on it. That was a question I had. The Prime hydration station, little much. But then we had almost every match had its own sponsor, and it was sponsor overload on this show. You knew it was going to be, and this is, I mean, you may not like this, but this is the way these big shows are going to be.
We better get used to it. Yeah. I thought actually the Prime logo in the center of the ring was one of the least obtrusive advertising, you know, things that they
until Cody entered for the main event and got on kissed it, and kissed the logo. That was too much. But
Cody, by the way, of course, the new spokesperson or new, what do you call him?
Yeah, he's
mascot Prime.
He's a Prime athlete, as they are calling it.
Yeah. So, overall, like, I mean, you know, it's to be expected. You know, there's an F1 race going on at the moment, and if you ever turn on one of those, it's any place that they can plaster a logo, they will.
The part of me that has watched, you know, Dude Wipes was a prominent one for MMA. Yeah. For wrestling fans to be introduced to Dude Wipes during the Jay versus Jimmy Uso match, that was the one that stood out for people.
So, yeah, right.
I mean, I was expecting like Condom Depot to maybe make their way in.
The selection process of pairing which product with which match is also just an interesting one. I mean, you would expect maybe like they would also consider just having every brand like take its own little space at a time, but who knows? There's a lot of future potential to cram logos all around.
Rhea Ripley and Becky Lynch are opening the show for the Women's World Championship, and they had Rhea's theme song played live by Motionless in White. Came out, our first big entrance of the night, where we got several of them.
Yeah. Becky had one. Again, couldn't hear it.
With the book. We were still getting our audio issues figured out at this point.
Seemed to read a passage from her book, and it led to, you know, one of her really fancy outfits. But the real one seemed to be really, like, good energy, you know? Like, she seemed, like, completely hyped. Talked about in the press conference how this is a band that she grew up loving, and this was a bit of a dream moment for her, so... Yeah.
And we'll have Becky and Cody bookending WrestleMania.
Oh, look at that. Yes.
So, yeah, they brought up how Becky has a 102 degree fever. Now, I didn't hear this exact line, but I think it was Pat McAfee who was trying to explain that because it's cold, the fever might be working in her favor
because it's cooling her down.
I was told this secondhand because I was not hearing the audio.
Dr. McAfee.
I would love to have known that one.
Sure.
For all that was said, you know, the crowd was exceptionally hot, especially for Rhea. I think, like, again, we were enclosed, but it seemed to be the crowd was more significantly behind Rhea Ripley, even some boos for Becky at times. And Becky was working on the arm of Rhea, trying to go for the arm bar. This is where we're getting our weather updates, and the term chilly and Philly was utilized quite a lot throughout the night. After the disarmer was broken on the turnbuckle, Rhea got the prism lock and goes to the mat, Becky stops a riptide and hits her first manhandle slam. That was our first big near fall. And then Rhea counters and hits a riptide. And when Becky kicked out of the riptide, man, this crowd, they booed this. And Becky comes back with a superplex into the disarmer. Rhea lifts her onto her shoulders and they flip to the floor, and Becky stays on the shoulders, very impressive looking, and into an electric chair on the floor. They get back in. Rhea hits a frog splash for a two count and then avoids a manhandle slam from the top turnbuckle and lifts up Becky. Riptides are on the turnbuckle, follow up riptide, and Rhea retains in 17 minutes and 5 seconds. I thought a pretty good match. It wasn't my match of the show, but I thought it got WrestleMania off to a very strong start. And it's evidence that Rhea Ripley is super over. It's just been a case of finding challengers that are ones that people can sink their teeth into. Becky was one of those. And I was not surprised here that they are very much into these long, lengthy title reigns. And with Rhea, they're trying to make her this, you know, unstoppable force in the women's division. And I guess the question will be if they run this one back with Becky doubting herself and comes back. I could see them getting another pay-per-view match.
I could see maybe Clash at the Castle or like one of the European shows being.
Well, they're in France next month.
Yeah.
That's being
a potential spot for rematch. I also think that there might have been something to like using this particular moment and the particular spotlight you would get from a WrestleMania to give Rhea this really important crowning achievement type of moment, which she. has she had in the past? I mean, she won the title last year, of course.
The big moment was in Australia in February.
Yeah, but this Nia felt just like even bigger than that, because maybe more eyeballs, because it's WrestleMania. I think this one also signified a full year with the championship.
Yes.
And not just that, but a full year, like, sort of in the spotlight. Like, she really – Becky is the most famous person in the women's division, but Rhea has been the hottest person in the division for an entire year now. And this almost felt like it was a bit of a coronation to fully confirm that this is the next person ahead of a Becky Lynch. So I thought like she looked really impressive in the match. You know, she had like just a level, like an extra level of aggression and intensity that I guess you saw it definitely in the Australia match, because like she seemed very hyped for that one too. But like she goes in ring and she just like, it's just like emptying the gas tank, and it's a extra level of intensity that makes her actually very special to watch. This match felt like a really good sprint, and I thought it was a very satisfying opener overall.
And the story we had talked about going in of how they would handle Judgment Day, she was the only Judgment Day member to win.
Yes.
On the night. Mm-hmm. And that segues well to the six-pack ladder match for the Undisputed Tag Titles. So the way this is set up is that you had the Raw Tag Titles and the SmackDown Tag Titles hung separately in the ring, and it was the idea of we're likely going to split up the belts. That's mm-hmm. what they're doing. And
to precede this, we had a video from Pretty Deadly. Now, this aired to anybody who didn't get the Peacock commercials, but there was a video from Pretty Deadly essentially introducing all the six teams. Yeah.
So we had Damian Priest and Finn Balor defending against DIY, The New Day, New Catch Republic, R-Truth and The Miz, and Grayson Waller and Austin Theory. DIY came out in their Triple H and Shawn Michaels costumes. New Day was dressed as Rocky and Apollo / Consequences Creed, mm-hmm. With a throwback there for Austin Creed. And the match begins, and we saw Bate and Dunn with these double moonsaults off a ladder to the floor, and Michael Cole starts pushing the Renaissance era, and Corey Graves just dismissed it. He's like, I've never heard this term Renaissance used so much as it has been this week. I don't think he is co-signing off this being the Renaissance era, as Cody has dubbed it.
What exactly is it a Renaissance of?
I don't know.
Like what?
I just don't know if that's a, I don't imagine any kids like just, hey man, remember the days of the Renaissance era?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if that one just rolls off the tongue.
Okay.
R-Truth was super popular in this match. When he was tagged in, he's doing the Cena spots, five knuckle shuffle, and then an AA to Balor onto a ladder in the corner. And we continued. Gargano sets up for Sweet Chin Music, hits Priest, Ciampa with a pedigree, and then DIY and Truth and Miz agree there's two sets of belts. Let's each climb and get them. So they did, but the ladders were tipped by Waller and Theory, allowing Waller to climb up and grab the SmackDown belts at about 7.5 minutes. So they get one set of titles, but the match continues until the Raw titles are distributed. So Waller is sent over the top by Dunn and Bate with a powerbomb onto a ladder that was positioned between the apron and the desk. Tables were brought out. Kingston comes off a ladder with a trust fall to everyone on the floor. There's a Birmingham hammer onto Austin Theory, and then Gargano with the one final beat, but this is to Dunn to the outside, putting him through a table on the floor, and Ciampa hitting an air raid crash off the ladder to Tyler Bate. So Truth is left alone here. He climbs when JD McDonagh appears and climbs up the ladder. He's helping Balor, New Day come in to attack, and they tip the ladder, and JD takes this insane flip over the top, crashing through a table. So you had not only the Judgment Day losing here, but also JD screwing up his attempt to help them. So Priest destroys the New Day. There's a razor's edge to Kingston. Priest and Miz are on the ladder, and we get the one like really noticeable botched move here was this South of Heaven, where it looked like the ladder's leg gave out, so a new ladder gets set up. But Truth tips Damian Priest off the ladder, and an AA sends Priest to the floor. So it's R-Truth getting his revenge on Damian Priest for the last several months, and Truth is left there to climb, and this place is going wild for R-Truth as he climbs, grabs the belts at 17:21, and him and Miz hug on the ladder, and they note that this is R-Truth's first win at a WrestleMania.
Ah, Yes.
So we got Waller and Theory with the SmackDown belts, R-Truth and Miz with the Raw belts.
Yeah, so the titles are split now, Raw and SmackDown. I thought it was a very entertaining match. I thought they managed to find a way to not have this feel too cluttered, which was going to be a concern, I think, with all 12 people. It's essentially like the way they do any sort of multi-man match. You know, they just are very good about focusing two people inside the ring, and everybody else is just kind of like, you know, selling on the outside. I thought there were enough satisfying stunts throughout to kind of live up to the expectations of a ladder based match. It was not maybe it didn't go overboard the way like a TLC might have. This was not necessarily just a car crash type of match. It was, they did enough to be satisfying, while I think somewhat being safe and conservative overall, although some of those spots, I guess you could debate, but they all turned out really well. I thought everybody had some spotlight here, whether it be DIY and New Catch Republic, like being just like taking some really big bumps. Waller and Theory obviously getting the win. JD McDonagh, I thought, had a pretty notable, like memorable appearance, and he took a huge bump. But by far, it was R-Truth that received the biggest reaction in this match. And the hot tag, where did you like, you know, where he was just like reaching out for the Miz and then came in like that, and the crowd completely like treated it like a hot tag. That was among like the more,
oh, and he did the spot too after the AA where he goes for the pinfall as well.
Yes, among the most the biggest reactions of the entire match. And I really think it was a really nice moment to cap off an incredible year for R-Truth, a renaissance of a year for R-Truth's career.
Renaissance, you know? Truth.
Yes. So a good match. Titles being split, I guess, gives them more a chance to tell different stories across the two brands rather than just having, you know, one set of champions being able to defend them at all times. So do you like the idea of this match being an annual event for WrestleMania?
A ladder match?
For the tag team titles.
Oh, where you just put both tag titles up. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's definitely a way that you can get a lot of people in the mid card into the show. I it was a fine ladder match. I'm not even looking for, like, I don't want to see the crazy stunt matches. I just don't think they lack lack the same impact. Whereas this one was, I'm not going to say a safe ladder match, but I didn't watch any spots and was like concerned for a guy's like well-being afterward. And yeah. I think that's what you want to get out of these ladder matches now, is just enough that satisfies what the stipulation calls for without guys killing each other, where it's probably going to be forgotten. It's very hard to have anything, you know, stunt worthy. That's, you know, this side of a Darby Allin that's going to have that lasting impact that people are looking for.
I thought this achieved just that, you know, like it at no point was I necessarily like concerned for the safety of any of them, but I was
like, JD might have taken like the most ambitious thing, and he was the 13th guy in this.
But I was still captivated and entertained by it. I like it as an annual thing, just because I think it adds some sort of like,
yeah.
Number one, it gives some much needed attention to the tag team division, and if you make it an annual thing, then you know that at the very least you have a stage to perform. If you're a part of the tag team division, you don't even need much build for story. Number two, it kind of satisfies something that the Money in the Bank match used to provide for WrestleMania, in that it just gives you a spectacle, a guaranteed, you know, gimmick match spectacle every year. I certainly prefer to something like an Andre Battle Royal if you're just going to use those spots to cram, or just like the years of just multi tag team four ways just to cram all the teams in there. This is a much better alternative. I wonder if they would even consider doing it with the women, like if they have enough, you know, women's tag teams in the future.
Well, they don't at the moment. Jordan Burroughs was showing in the crowd, and they promoted the Olympic trials on Peacock.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Rey Mysterio and Andrade against Santos Escobar and Dominic Mysterio was next.
There was a brief sort of C4 Energy Presents moment that prompted the Bray Wyatt tribute with all the cell phones.
That's right. From the sky cam, they showed everyone putting their cell phones up. But over to this tag match, it was Minute Maid that provided us with this match. And Rey Mysterio had some great Philadelphia Eagles gear made for this show. Andrade early on hits a spinning elbow that lands. Rey did this double high cross with Andrade. He's on the shoulders of Andrade, and they both come off the turnbuckle.
They're in an electric chair position, and they both jump while in the electric chair position, which is very impressive.
What could have gone wrong?
Obviously nothing.
Nothing. It went off well. Cole is Cole at one point just like dismissed a point that Graves had made. He's like, you're going to make a big deal out of Carlito's reaction last night, like I'm seeing on the internet, to Dragon Lee being taken out of this match. So it's like they're almost calling the people that are reading into the Carlito thing. Mm-hmm. Rey then goes into a code red, tags Andrade. Andrade like looked good in this match, like yep. flipping to a baby face, like worked well, had a lot of moments to shine here. Elektra gets on the apron and is yanked down by Zelina Vega, and then Vega goes for a moonsault off the turnbuckle and came up short on Elektra. Then we got Angel and Berto involved with Joaquin Wilde and Cruz del Toro, including Wilde getting to do his big propeller spot where he gets thrown
slingshot.
The slingshot off the middle rope and flies in the air, which was a great spot to save for this match. And then Dominic grabs a chair when two masked men show up to attack Dom, who is hit with a double 619. Rey pins him with a frog splash in 1102. And the masked men are revealed as Lane Johnson and Jason Kelsey of the Philadelphia Eagles. And this got a big pop.
Yeah. These guys are pretty popular, aren't they?
Yes. So yes. Nice cameo that you had here. And this was their role on the show, and yeah, no angle of any sort, but that,
well, this was the angle, you know,
I mean, the angle was this, yeah, but in relation to like Carlito or anything of that, but I feel like this is going to be a program that does continue with all the stuff that has been introduced, and whether it's like Dominic having some group of his own that comes out of this, there's probably more to be had here.
Very much so. Yeah. I thought it was a good match. Overall, kind of devolved into madness by the end, but you maybe kind of needed it because of the celebrity involvement. I thought getting the rest of the LWO and Legado involved was good. I didn't love the fact that like it was the finish though. Like, part of me just kind of wanted more of like a complete match, and this felt very much like, hey, here's our celebrity like moment excuse by the end of it.
This was their hoped upon Sports Center moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Or a viral clip,
which
that's
is
gonna,
fine, especially,
yeah, you want to have that, and
especially considering this is a program that's going to continue. Certainly the star power in this feud has really risen a whole lot more now that you have Rey back, now that you have Andrade, you know, involved as well. And Carlito is actually going to become interesting. It actually seems like there's story there. So they're saving to tell a bit, like they're saving this one for television, which is perfectly fine.
Then it was time for the Dude Wipes brother versus brother match between Jay and Jimmy Uso. As I said many times, I was waiting for the video package. They did not disappoint. They had this phenomenal video package. Did mm-hmm. you see this?
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah.
Really great. And then we had
it was great because like so that was one of the things that I think I really stood out to me about the show is just maybe the difference in video package ideas that we might not always see from the WWE. This was one where you had Jimmy and Jay both like
back to back, and
they're almost like talking out of universe, you know. It was like them being in the same room together back to back, talking about their own lives, giving out their real names and talking about their history, being born together and coming up together, and then at some point splitting. It was just a very unique way of telling a professional wrestling recap.
It was. I thought that this package, it was great. It just leaned on just, hey, their whole history, showing various photos, the family members, Jimmy being 9 minutes older than his brother. And then we had, as introduced by Samantha Irvin, the greatest rapper ever, Lil Wayne. And he came out and, I mean, he had promoted he was going to be doing like
his new song.
His new song. Yeah. It was, we kind of just got, you know, introduction and into Jay's theme. But, I mean, crowd was into this entrance. They were going nuts for it. It was quite the visual of all the fans with their arms going up in the stadium setting. And we had, throughout the night, shots of different fans and places. They showed in London, in Germany, various places around the world. Jimmy takes control at the beginning, and both are trading super kicks. And then Jay is drilling him in the corner. I'm your twin brother. And Jimmy gets on his knees, and Jay pulls up. He won't pull the trigger with the final super kick. And Jimmy's apologizing. He offers his hand, and Jay lifts him up, and he's holding Jimmy, and it's just a plot. And Jimmy super kicks his brother and goes for the Uso splash, but it's a near fall. Jay kicks out, and it's Jay coming back just with a spear and his own Uso splash and wins it in 11 minutes and 8 seconds. And I thought, like, the presentation around this was really good. The intro, I love the intro. The match was really simple. It was not anything too substantive. I can't say it was that memorable of anything I'm going to take away. Like, they did the tease at the end of it. It was fine. I wouldn't say that this really jumped out at me, though.
I thought it was disappointing.
Yeah.
And from some of the reaction I'm seeing in the chat room and I've seen online, this might have been the worst match on the show.
I wouldn't disagree.
I thought the physicality was not that physical.
It just felt all of a sudden it's like we're going to the home stretch here. And it was.
So I have a suspicion that maybe a lot of the matches on this particular show were cut for time because of the main event. This only went, what, 11 minutes?
11.
And just considering maybe the feud, you would expect that norm under other circumstances without a 40 plus minute main event, this might have received 15 at least.
And let's say 45 minutes plus like another 15 of intros and so, like, yeah. It was well over an, like, you passed an hour of time.
But if you're gonna book for an 11 minute match, I think there were other ways that you could have done it than this. This was I guess they're trying to tell a mirror image story with the both of them doing super kicks and only doing super kicks throughout the whole thing. I don't think it really worked. I think the Shawn Michaels theater portion of it with Jay pretending, saying I'm sorry, that just felt incredibly easy and not creative enough to any really certainly modern eyes that
and no one bought the idea of Jay, like, this idea of like teasing of reunion of the Usos was going to generate this great moment for the fan base and then they'd swerve them. That wasn't there at all, and no one bought it.
And the finish was just like kind of unspectacular, like didn't really feel dramatic enough, didn't really feel climactic. It just kind of felt like here's a spear and we're out, you know. So I continue to be kind of hot and cold on the Usos when it comes to their singles matches. For the most part, I don't know if Jay has really been that impressive as a singles star. Certainly it depends on, you know, who's on the other end. But when it's himself on the other end, somebody who works the exact same style as him, this did not feel like a very good combination, unfortunately.
Michael Cole and Corey Graves are now, they have upgraded to winter gear. Pat McAfee did not bring any such clothing and looked like he was just freezing on commentary. Mm. So that was fun. Dakota Kai, Asuka, and Kairi Sane against Jade Cargill, Naomi, and Bianca Belair. Everyone got big entrances here, including like Damage Control. They came out.
They had like geisha.
Yeah, they had like girls. They were with them. And then the entrance for Cargill, Naomi, and Bianca Belair. We wondered, are they each going to get some big entrance? No, they all came together. And this,
as soon as like Damage Control were completing their entrance, I could look over in the darkness to the stage and I could see this like riser going up. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here? Like, and it was fucking awesome. They cut to this like beautifully backlit shot of the three of them standing together as they descend from the heaven. I mean, it was the Shawn Michaels descent, but this looked even cooler. These three were treated like gods. Like they looked amazing. There's just something, they've really kind of like tapped into something where like the three of them together, they just They look incredible. And I couldn't have imagined a better presentation of the three of them as a unit. Now, I thought like they would each get separate ones and Jade would like get a version of what we've seen from her now on SmackDown, but just on a bigger stage. They opted to do something completely different. Now, each person did get their own little spotlight, but it was very brief just to kind of get them all off the sort of ramp and in onto the stage. And then the three of them started walking down the ramp together. And that moment alone, I thought was amazing. Just to see the three of them together, three women of color, each with individuality, each looking like stars. And as a unit, just like there was something incredibly powerful about seeing like three black women presented this way as like not just three individuals again, but three superstars. And I also love the fact that Bianca was the last person who had her music played, and then she took center stage, because throughout all this, I feel like Bianca has kind of felt like not necessarily like the focused upon figure in the unit. It's been Jade who's been taking center stage, but Bianca on a WrestleMania stage should rightfully take center stage. She is the person who's main evented WrestleMania a couple times now. And she was called Mrs. WrestleMania, which I think she actually, you know.
And they're slowly giving her like the undefeated streak at WrestleMania too.
Yeah, yeah. So she took the center stage and was kind of treated as like the leader, if you want to call it that. But the three of them together are just, they looked incredible.
Yeah. Like this was so much about the presentation and how this came across. Obviously, the focus was going to be on Jade Cargill. And I would say that was a big success in this. I mean, this was less so about the actual match and more so about just the impact of the presentation. And it was very, very strong with the production that they had attached to all of them. And I'd include Damage Control. Like they didn't just feel like the afterthoughts here either. It's Kyrie hitting the elbow to the floor, and then Belair is in doing her vertical suplex onto Sane, and then a handspring moonsault onto all three women at the same time. Jade, they are teasing the tag, but Kai cuts it off, but then Jade gets in and she hits a choke slam. She catches Kyrie Sane's high cross into a backbreaker, splashes Kai, and then delivers a Michinoku driver when Asuka and Kai jump in for the save. The ending comes when Asuka goes to spray the mist, misses, and missed Sane, while Belair then takes the braid and whips Asuka, hitting her with the KOD, and it ends with Jaded onto Dakota Kai in 8 minutes. So I would say for what you wanted to do here, like this was Jade Cargill coming across like the big star they wanted her to. It was, she was in there for a little bit, but she was made to be the big, you know, focus at the end of it that they built the tag toward. And I would say this was a success in that regard.
I thought so too. Big success. I think we had all expected this to be really great for Jade, but I'm really pleasantly surprised to see that it was great for all three of Jade, Bianca, and Naomi. I mean, we're talking about Naomi that I think, I don't know, for a time, like after her Rumble debut, I wondered if she would even get on WrestleMania with any sort of spot. This turned out to be a wonderful spot for her. Like she got her own spotlight, you know, and is a part of a major faction. Same with Bianca. Like we don't really know sort of what she was going to be a part of for several weeks heading into WrestleMania. But this I felt was just a wonderful introduction to this group that seems like they'll be sticking around. They have their own hand sign now with like the three hand sign.
It doesn't feel like this was just, you know, get these three onto WrestleMania. It's like this is going to be an alliance on SmackDown.
Exactly.
With these three.
And I think it's a wonderful spot for Jade Cargill. I mean, I think at this point I've seen enough to be able to say like Jade Cargill is still very green. Like she still has like that Michinoku driver thing she did looked really good, but there's still a lot is demanded of her in this position. She's not getting time to spend in NXT because she's too popular. She's too valuable. So she has to learn on the job. She has to learn like on the big stage. And I think you will help her a lot more by letting her be the muscle of this group rather than just having her come out and do singles matches all on her own. You know, as the muscle of this group,
you can do trios matches, you can do tags.
Yeah.
And you've got like Damage Control are the opponents you want for her to be involved with and working, and again, doing live events. I think now they built so much up to this first match, and now Like, she should be another one that is on the road a lot and doing, you know, your 8-9 minute matches and getting those and that level of reps in.
But this match also reminded me why Bianca, like, should rightfully be, if you want to call it that, the leader of this group, because I thought she looked awesome here. What I'm most excited by is the potential storytelling and the personality building between the members of this faction. The way that they've done already with Naomi and Bianca, like, they're different. They're different people, and even the minor conflict they had over the Bayley issue was enough to tell me that there's so much potential in being able to tell stories between even the members of the group themselves. And I'm so curious to see how they'll interact with Jade and what sort of personality they'll build for Jade Cargill.
On we go to the Intercontinental title match. Second from the top, it's Gunther defending against Sami Zayn. And we're in the back, and there is Sami Zayn with his wife, Khadija, and son. Do we know the son's name?
I don't know. Remy Jr., I believe.
Okay. So, I mean, this was... If you're not focusing on the story, I mean, this was a lot like this was exceptionally like over the top, but it so worked for the moment because it's Sami Zayn and he's hugging his wife and child and telling his wife to keep their son back. I don't want him to see this. And it kind of ties into the whole story with Chad Gable and like him losing in front of his daughter. And it's still like that moment. He's still got that doubt even going into this big match of keeping his son in the back and not wanting his son to see him. You know, as we're recreating this Elimination Chamber scenario for him, mm-hmm. where it's, you know, all the people are behind him and can I hit a home run when it's the bottom of the ninth? So
there are a few things. I felt like this was maybe a bit of a way to counter all the Chad Gable sort of momentum that's been built up, because Sammy, we know from Booker T, has kind of lamented on like the reaction he received when he beat Chad Gable for this title shot, because so many people want to see Chad Gable win. And maybe it's because we see exactly what Chad Gable is fighting for in the form of his daughter that's crying. This almost felt like an attempt to remind everybody, Sami Zayn has a kid too, you know, so he should feel bad for him just as much. Beyond that, this was also another long shot, just so you know, one take steady cam shot that we followed from the back all the way to the front.
I love
one of the coolest entrances, just so simple. We've seen them do it on Raw. Turns out that was almost just a trial run so that they could do it at WrestleMania, and to take the entire audience from the back. As we go through the various interactions, he runs into Chad Gable,
who tells him, I'm staying in the back, and Zayn is kind of like, after all this, you're not coming out with me. And he said that you've got this on your own. You always did. And does add, don't forget you owe me a favor on top of that for training him. And so we follow Sammy through the ramp. He goes to the gorilla position, and there waiting for him at gorilla is Kevin Owens, who just rallies him with one final pep talk, really cool moment. And then you will just watch Sammy walk. I love this whole scene as they just set up the, at this point it was like, for all like I wanted to say about, man, I wish they could have had a bit more time to establish this with Gable. Fact is, when they got to this moment, this felt like a huge match. This felt like one of the biggest matches of either night of WrestleMania. Certainly. you could argue it's like the number three match in terms of just overall interest,
considering the fact that this was originally what rumored to be Brock Lesnar versus Gunther. And they didn't really.
You don't think they could have done this exact same thing with Sammy and Brock
switching? I wonder what Sammy would have had, if not for all that. But you know, they've done such a great job of building this story over the past month alone. That I think it says a lot about just Gunther, and it says a lot about Sami Zayn and Chad Gable. You know, about how good performers and the people that are responsible for writing all of this. But I love that long shot. Like, it's one thing to have a cool looking shot. It's another to be able to use it to tell story and to create, I guess, a level of like relatability, because that's what I thought it did for you. It took you from the perspective of Sami Zayn, like any fighter, really, like prior to them going out onto the main stage. You got to see the nervousness behind the scenes of him, of them like talking to their loved ones, talking to their colleagues, and you just follow them as they go through the nerves of walking through that long tunnel in front of that crowd. It was like a great sort of representation of just the nerves that a performer might go through before entering a big stage.
Yeah, I was worried Sami Zayn was like going to break his hand on something. Like he was, he was in the zone as you were following him. It was a really cool shot that they had.
Yeah.
I would love to know how fast Sami Zayn's wife made it from this backstage scene to the front row.
Well, she might have did her own, you know, dash.
I bet she got out of the parking lot a lot quicker.
Maybe.
So she was amazing. This role in the front row, and the taunting that Gunther was delivering, and then she's coming back later and be like, it's over for you. Yeah, it was like some great stuff from her that they had, and it wasn't like too much either, but Gunther is in charge first. He's being very dominant. Zayn is trying to come back, and it just is lit up with chops. So Zayn starts throwing wildly, and one of them catches Gunther, and he's stunned by it. So he sees his opening and tries for a haluva kick and runs right into a rear naked choke, then gets out of that, blue thunderbomb, back into a rear naked choke, and he's fighting and fighting to the rope, and Gunther blasts him with a power bomb, and Gunther hits his own haluva kick, smiles at Sammy's wife, and then Zayn, with this brief distraction, sees his opening and lands the haluva kick for out of nowhere for a near fall. So Gunther is up from this momentary lapse in judgment and delivers one power bomb, up a second power bomb, but Zayn kicks out and Gunther can't believe this. And this is when Sammy's wife is just like, that's it. That was your chance. It's over now. And dismisses his chances of winning. Gunther starts attacking, stomping him. This is full Ivan Drago mode where if he dies, he dies.
Yes.
And he hits another power bomb. Michael Cole is screaming at the referee to stop the match if Sammy can't defend himself. So Gunther climbs up for a frog splash, but Zayn comes to life. And as Gunther is climbing the turnbuckle, gets nailed with a haluva kick, and Zayn climbs the turnbuckle, and I could see what he was setting up for, and he hits the El Generico brainbuster onto the top turnbuckle, and then follows with a haluva kick, a second one, as the crowd is on their feet and they are going nuts for the end of this. Michael Cole, he just said, F it. I'm using the line, do you believe in miracles? This guy was just in another orbit, and Zayn pins him in 15 and a half minutes. Massive pop, and John Pollock's match of the show.
My match of the show too. Yeah.
This was awesome. The crowd was electric for this. And I love the presentation of this from the backstage preparation with Sammy, with Owens and Gable, everything involving his wife. And just, this was the timing. This was the time to do it. And it was just a great laid out match. And I love this. I thought this was just great.
The more I think about it, the more I think maybe like the lack of time that they really had to tell the story might have actually been a benefit to them, because they were forced to keep things simple. This was a deceptively simple story that they had to tell between David versus Goliath. And you had possibly the best Goliath that this company has ever seen in years. And you have, I think, one of the best Davids in Sami Zayn, who just is just so amazing as this babyface performer, always has been. But now, you know, he like hasn't had much of a focus, in my opinion, over the past year, but they found really like the perfect spot for him in telling the story. Again, deceptively simple, but when you do deceptively simple really well, it becomes just the gourmet. So incredible presentation, as you mentioned, of the underdog. And Gunther, they didn't really have to do much work because
this guy is just,
he's had 2 years of building up this aura. That video package where he just kind of comes out in like talking like it's a presentation about his own career, it was like really great. The chops tonight sounded especially loud, and I don't know if it was the mixing, because like usually like
he was worried the audio was still out in our media box, wanted us to hear them,
because like usually like in a stadium, I actually have no idea how it sounded in the crowd because we were enclosed, so I can't really tell. But at least in the mix on TV, it sounded, these chops sounded amazing. The atmosphere sounded amazing. And for Sami Zayn, I mean, there are so many, I think, notes that were reminiscent of Elimination Chamber, which you and I were present at, which we kind of saw.
It looked.
I could see this.
I could see their
better.
Heads. It was, yeah.
But we
great
were,
movement.
We both felt the disappointment along with the entire city of that Elimination Chamber loss to Roman Reigns. This. It was not the same, but because it was WrestleMania, because it was a champion at the level of Gunther, it felt like a satisfying sort of make good for that disappointment.
I was thinking, like, for whatever reason, maybe it's because like some of these programs, like they've done a fairly good job with the stories. As I start thinking about like what's the video package going to look like, and I thought about that with like the Usos was an easy one, and with this one, I thought. They ended up doing this really great one with Gunther with the past IC champions. It was very good. Mm-hmm. But I thought like that press conference is what I remember more than even like the match itself. It was Sammy and it was like it lends it. You can totally funnel it into storyline that I failed. But in the moment, like he was so distraught with the idea that you only get this timing and become this babyface.
Did I miss my moment?
Exactly. Yeah. So he's living this real life disappointment about was this the best option of beating me on this night when I was a red hot baby face? And that's easily transferable into this story, into the whole thing of doubt. And it was to me like the lasting memory I have of that show was it was all of like the buzz of that week going into that show with Sammy in Montreal. But then the 180 afterward at that press conference that anyway it's there and again as we kept harping on is that next Monday a week from Monday they're in Montreal and you've set up that Bronson Reed match. You also have this rematch with Gunther if you want to do that, and that could be something you go to right away, but the Bronson Reed one you still have that loss.
That's an immediate TV match, which actually would fit perfectly for Montreal. But they also have a big Chad Gable match that they set up as well. So it'll be interesting to see how they do that one. Like, does one of them turn? Do they stick with the double babyface? And how do they balance it? Because I think there's still enough people that really want to see Chad Gable win. So how they navigate that, I wonder. But those two have like tremendous chemistry, and I feel like there's just so much more story to tell between the two. So I'd love to see some sort of like long-term saga with Chad Gable and Sami Zayn coming off of this.
Adam Pearce and Nick Aldis announce in the ring. The announced attendance, 72,543. The last WrestleTix count was 68,412. So, and that's not the final count from WrestleTix. So, I mean, a far cry from some of the like 10 to 15,000 exaggerations.
Right. But there is a difference between WrestleTix tracking the ticket sales and the number of people that are in attendance, which is what WWE are reportedly, I guess, or what they claim. Yeah.
It is worth noting, Paul Levesque, while not giving a gate figure, did state this was a gate record. So that would mean above $17.3 million. And they're going to break that record again tomorrow night as well. So that WrestleMania 32 number is going to be number 3 by the end of this weekend. So very impressive that they broke their all-time gate record twice this weekend.
Yeah.
And that's takes us to the main event with Roman Reigns and The Rock against Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins, better known as the American Shield.
American Home Shield.
That's right. Yeah. Yes. So it was, I want to say it was approaching 10 o'clock as they were teeing up the main event. And I'm saying the way I think we'll be out of here by 11. I think that's a realistic possibility.
I even took out my app and booked an Uber for 11:25 PM.
It's like, no problem. There's no way that's going to be out of.
We'll get out of here. We'll like have time to like, you know, grab a bite and then we'll get into our car. Sure.
Even after 17 minutes of entrances, I still am looking at, okay, it's 10:20. We are going to be out of here by 11. And then they decided to have the second longest match in the history of WrestleMania and went 45 minutes. Was not on my expectations for Dwayne Johnson's first match in 11 years.
I mean, should we really be that surprised at this point? Like, this is Dwayne, okay? We know he's loving this. He's clearly having a great time. And this is him on the biggest stage possible. He's going to take as much time as he needs.
Listen, you know? For his involvement here, I mean, this guy was not doing 630s. I mean, he did like a 12-week training camp, and he didn't blow up. He was there for all of his spots. Like, he was equal contributor in this match, and he had the unbelievable presence that he's always going to bring to these. And beginning with his entrance here as a version 10,
yes,
Dwayne Johnson,
the 10.0.
Yes, as I joked, I guess that makes Mark Kerr version 11.
I suppose so. Yeah, in some form, yeah. Sure. Which form was Moana?
Oh, that was 6.3.
Oh, 6.3, yeah. And the Tooth Fairy.
Tooth Fairy. Oh, that was version negative two.
Maybe a beta, you know, yeah. Copy.
Yes.
Yes.
So he comes out. He's got his People's Championship that was given to him by
Lonnie Ali
from the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure we'll do you think this will be on sale at some point in the not too distant future?
Positive it's already up there right now.
And he came through a Brahma Bull of Fire.
Oh, so cool.
Yeah.
They had this wonderful shot of, like, you know, from the distance, so that, you know, before the reveal of the bull shape, you only saw the Rock from a distance. It looked like he was like walking through flames. It looked so badass.
I remember when that Skydome Raw being right at the entrance. Mm-hmm. That was where I was seated, at the corner. So yeah. When the Brood came up, like, I'm right there as the flames are. Dude, I can't tell you how hot it was.
Oh, sure.
And he's going through this, and he's wearing pants and stuff. But
let's also remember, this is 50 degrees Fahrenheit.
You're right. Yeah. It was fairly cold, so he did have that working for him. But, man, I just – there is an it's super hot, these flames. But nonetheless, super entrance for The Rock. And he is following Rollins and Cody, who had, you know – they're standard entrances, but I mean, these are four superstar entrances for the main event of the show. But
tonight was about The Rock.
It was
everybody's going to be wrestling again tomorrow. Tonight was our first time seeing Dwayne Johnson wrestling a match in how long? 10?
Well, if you throw out the Eric Rowan match, 2013.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it starts off, and The Rock is tagged in around the six, 7 minute mark, and he's interacting with Rollins. The crowd is chanting loudly for Cody, and The Rock starts threatening to fire referee Chad Patton if he counts him out. So pretty much for the rest of the match, that was their explanation for doing like a bloodline rules match. There's no rules, because if the ref calls anything, he's fired.
Yeah.
Didn't stop him from counting when the baby faces were going for pins, but that was allowed.
This is one of those things where, like, when you really think about it hard enough, it just, you got to shut your brain off and just, like,
they still adhered to tags.
Like, why wouldn't you just, you know, get the ref to fast count? Why wouldn't you just appoint a referee if you're, you know, so in charge of everything? But
I also didn't know this was in the board of directors guidelines either, that they had this kind of power.
You don't think who are the other board members?
I think if Manjit Singh had known about this, he might have stayed on the board.
Manjit Singh could really threaten the People's Championship, I think.
Yeah.
But I think the idea was to show what an out of control Dwayne Johnson with complete power can do. And it's to give a preview of the type of, you know, nonsense that will take place tomorrow, which of course would warrant help in the form of other people with Cody.
So Rock, after introducing a trash can, he's using that on Rollins. Reigns then chop blocks Rollins from the floor, so they start working on his knee. They wrap it around the post, and then later would go after the back by throwing him into the steps. So Seth Rollins is just falling apart here, and that's part of the story here. He's is back. That even it, like, they'll lose the match, but Seth is going into this match with Drew destroyed, and Drew stating, you should be focusing on me, and now this, you've hurt yourself by going into this main event and now have to defend the title the next day. So Rock hits a low blow to Rollins right in front of Patton and applies the sharpshooter, but Cody comes in, slaps Rock to break the sharpshooter, and they start to take over. And Cody hits a Cody cutter to Reigns, and then a disaster kick is caught with a Superman punch in midair. Now, when you look at the match time here, I do feel they needed some time to start building things up, and they certainly hit a part where now you're getting into all the big stuff, and the crowd was with it, and they totally cared how this match ended, but
I was falling asleep.
Dude, there was a lot. This was too long of a match. Like the first half of this, it was very slow, very plodding.
Well, you're talking like this late into the show. I was
looking
having
at
trouble.
that Uber and wondering, man, are we going to make it? It was like, no, dude, we're not.
We are talking about, you know, Dwayne Johnson and really like a Roman Reigns, who even like just wrestling his style is more of a slower paced wrestler. And a 50 something year old Dwayne Johnson isn't going to make this match any faster when they're in control. So like when they had the heat, it really was not interesting. It was not boring. Typically, like I think Rock might be able to, even Roman might be able to get by with a lot more taunting. I didn't think there was anything enough there to make me, you know, to captivate me through like the very slow paced activity. It was boring. Yeah.
There were some really cool counters, especially from Cody, like the spear that he just leaps over for a sunset flip. There was like a double springboard into a Cody cutter. And then after Cody hits the crossroads onto Reigns after a stomp, that was our first major near fall where The Rock yanks the referee out and then applies the guillotine to Cody, and he's holding on to it. Reigns is holding down Cody's leg for more pressure, but Rollins stomps Reigns to break it up, and Rock grabs his belt and he starts yelling at Mama Rhodes, and Rhodes is yelling back at Rock. She was great here. She is screaming.
She's yelling bullshit.
Oh, it was great. Matt, you laid out an awesome idea of, you know, Rock giving her the belt, all Cody's blood on it, and then the next night, Cody can give the belt, the world belt to her. I thought they were going to do a lot more here with Mama Rhodes. Like they did the requisite interaction, but it wasn't like this mauling of Cody and just I just thought she was going to have more of like this really brutal beating of Cody, and it wasn't that.
Yeah, the whole thing Rock was promising was that he was going to give the weight training belt with the blood of Cody Rhodes on it. And at one point, he like teased the interaction, but there was no blood to be.
It's like they
no blood at all. In the
it
match.
Almost felt like we did the massive beating on television to sell the match, and they didn't do it here.
I guess it could be tomorrow, where they might be saving blood for the match tomorrow.
They could. I would think we're getting blood in that match. So anyway, Reigns misses Cody and spears Rock. And this was a huge, probably something that will be that they will go back to as a key spot in the match. And Rock sells this. Rollins and Cody hit double pedigrees and we get a double kick out. And at this point, took them 37 minutes. The crowd was super into this by this point. And for the final like 5-10 minutes, they were red hot for this. Rock and Cody go to the desk, and after Rollins interferes, there's a rock bottom by Cody, putting Rock through the desk. I don't care what you think, for Rock to take that, I mean, this guy's shooting the smashing machine in a couple of weeks. I mean, you cannot say that this guy just got by doing this guy could do a very serviceable match that the crowd's going to be into, do your greatest hits, but you know, a rock bottom through a desk, you know, he worked as hard as you're going to see from someone that, like, I was more impressed with his performance here than I was that last Cena match.
You mean the Rock versus Cena.
I would say, like, you know, both he got injured in.
They're very different types of matches, though. They are. You know, that one's a singles match where he has to do all the heavy lifting. This one, he could just kind of, he did half the match and then gave you a big spot, which I think was necessary for a main event at WrestleMania.
So Rock's put through the desk. Reigns spears Rollins through the barricade. That's the end of Rollins. And Cody grabs Reigns, hits him with back-to-back crossroads, but then Rock has a kendo stick as he comes back. There's a spear by Reigns, but Rock wants the tag. So he comes in and hits the rock bottom and puts the one in the air. Not an L. He puts the one in the air.
Yeah, so there's really nothing to that L.
Yeah, everyone wanted to read into that. And pins him with the people's elbow in 44 minutes and 32 seconds. And way astutely caught, they did the exact same shot of Cody seated in the seat, in the ring, dejected with Roman Reigns in the background, out of focus, holding up the belt. Really nice tie into last year's closing image and sets up the Bloodline rules for tomorrow night. And We just had the fireworks and pyro as Reigns and Rock held up their equally prestigious championships in the air and ended the show. So, I like, listen, they got to that fever pitch, but man, this was a long main event.
It was long, and it really, I mean, they really could have shaved quite a bit of time.
It's really hard to justify 45 minutes, even for a WrestleMania main event. Yeah.
Yes, I understand, like, you know, with the Rock match, I expected a lot of pausing, standing around, and, like, you know, just whatever, like, simmering in the moment. But at some point, you need that, like, interesting activity to carry us through a match. And I would say a good half of this match was pretty, like, dull, you know, for a WrestleMania match. But by the end, I thought The Rock did enough here to make the match work. I thought, like, all the moves that he still knows how to do, or at least, like, is capable of doing, still look good. He didn't attempt anything that he couldn't do convincingly. The moments that he had with Mama Rhodes, I thought were some of the most fun of the entire match. I wish I could have seen more of it, especially during, like, some of the early portions. There was definitely drag, but by the time the babyfaces, like, started their comebacks, and Cody and Seth as a tag team introduced all those, like, double team spots, the really great time run where, like, Cody goes for the top rope Cody cutter, Seth blind tags, and then immediately follows with the splash.
Cody and Seth awesome. Were great together. Like, they were another counter that, I mean, could have come across so hokey, but I thought it worked really well. Yeah. Was the first people's elbow tease, and Cody pops up, and as Rock is coming off the rope, Cody is cutter. Hit with the Cody cutter, and they timed that really well.
Very cool. Yeah, the double pedigree was lovely as well, and it almost, like, Mike called to attention. Paul Levesque, like, do you think we'll ever see him, like, get involved in any sort of physicality ever?
I don't throw out the idea of him doing something physical.
Yeah, I wonder. Because if Cody is going to assemble the Avengers, you know, and they did tease something early on with Triple H and Rock,
and haven't really gone back to that since the press conference.
Yeah, but I thought it was a good substantial main event, and served also as a prelude to what's to come on night two really well. This was essentially Infinity War, you know, with the villain winning. This is the Empire Strikes Back, the villain winning. The heroes are down for the count, and what are we going to do to save the world tomorrow night?
Yeah, and I think that's what a lot of people are looking at, is that closing, you know, scene, and who comes to help out Cody. One thing I would say, I think my predictions were pretty close, but one that I definitely did not call right was, like, the Jimmy J outcome. I thought of two things. I picked, like, Jimmy winning and they take out Jay. I could have also seen Jay wins and then they do an angle after for the big attack. Mm-hmm. They didn't do any kind of, like, attack, and maybe they saved that for tomorrow, but Jay, you would think, as of now, gets involved in the main event or something. But I like the idea of all of Cody's backup is gone and who's come to his aid. Yeah. I really like that idea for the main event, and maybe we'll see something like that throughout the show.
They might just save both he and Seth for just kind of, you know, teases of people that are going to come to save, but ultimately get taken out by who knows who, who, right? So we're also no Solo involved in anything, any of the shenanigans tonight as well. I guess maybe we should also mention Jacob Fatu being pulled last minute from Joey Janela's spring break clusterfuck, and that's at least led to some discussion and rumor that might be out there.
Yeah, I mean, you have the, you know, the speculation out there about, like, a Jacob Fatu, a Tama Tonga as well. And I mean, you could certainly look at, like, those would be prime candidates to look at of, like, popping up on a Raw.
Yeah,
on
Raw Monday. I would say more so for, like, some of those names, you know, rather than main event of WrestleMania.
Yeah. So there you go. That was WrestleMania. A good show. I'm not going to put this above.
It, like, wasn't better than, like, night one of last year.
No, I wouldn't say that.
I don't even know if it was better than night two. Like, Sammy versus Gunther was really good. I don't know if it was, like, so good that I would, like, you know, call this, like, a must, like, a one of the great WrestleMania nights. It really wasn't to me. Like,
no,
it was,
I wouldn't go that high. I really enjoyed Gunther and Sami Zayn. It was definitely my match of the show. Oh, yeah. Bianca and Rhea had, Becky and Rhea had a really, really strong match as well. But yeah, I would, like, if I was going, like, thumbs in the middle is kind of where I'm at on this show.
Yeah, for me though, like, so much of my enjoyment is the spectacle of WrestleMania and seeing the stage, seeing like the special entrances and the mm-hmm. video packages. And so I was for the most part captivated through the entire show, with the exception of the early portion of that main event where I was just like very tired and it wasn't very exciting wrestling. But because of like there were no like Gunther versus Sheamus versus like Drew like levels of matches on the show, which I think would have really carried this one. WrestleMania to me though is just, it's always fun because of the crowd and because of the spectacle. So like I would say it was a good show, but not one of the better WrestleManias in recent years.
So there you go. That concludes our thoughts on WrestleMania. The press conference afterwards, you caught the first two, which were Rhea Ripley and then Jade Cargill, Naomi and Bianca Belair. Mm-hmm. Anything notable from those two?
Honestly, not so much. I mean, it was Rhea kind of talking about how special it was for her to have the band and then got into a bit of in-character stuff, talking about maybe the disappointment of the Judgment Day losing. But I wouldn't, to my recollection, say that there was anything that newsworthy from her portion. I think Bianca, Jade, and Naomi spoke about just what representation means. So I really think they're going to be keeping them together as a unit for that very important fact. And, you know, seemingly treating the three of them as a tandem.
Yeah. Reigns came out with Paul Heyman, and the beginning, it was just painful of like all the in-character stuff. You like kicked some reporter out.
He was demanding reporters acknowledge him. And when one did not acknowledge him, he was demanding that they get kicked out of the
it turned around. He then kind of like I think got the vibe, and it was asked a very serious question, because at one point Pat McAfee had stated on the broadcast that he is actively battling leukemia, which is something he's always technically battling, and he explained that, like, I will deal with this for my entire life. It's not as though he's going through any specific struggle at the moment. It's an ongoing issue for him.
He's taking medication for it, which he did say on that WWE Legends biography. So it's just kind of reentered the public consciousness. But yeah, this is CML.
Yes, CML.
CML, which like he will always live with and he'll always have to manage is all he's saying.
Yeah. And just talk more about the run and the ideas behind the character when he was taking that time off during the pandemic. Yeah. And it was I would say those were some of the key things for Reigns. And then they had Dwayne Johnson come out. Johnson was great in terms of like the amount he was revealing just about this character, the preparation he put into it. He acknowledged that they were talking about WrestleMania 39, and that went back 2 years, and they didn't have a solid plan in mind, and you know, he has his schedule.
We should also mention, right after WrestleMania ended, they showed a teaser for the documentary behind the scenes
Going to release a documentary on Wednesday on YouTube with the whole kind of, well, WWE's behind the scenes of how this main event and WrestleMania card came to, mainly the main event coming together.
But it's still a very interesting prospect that they, this entire time of this quote unquote pivot, we'll find out if it was in fact a pivot, they were documenting the whole process.
Yeah. So, and I mean, Dwayne Johnson pretty much laid out the fact, number one, when he committed to this big comeback, it goes to Ari Emanuel, like, buying the company, and then he was on board to do something and dedicate the time that would be necessary for this, and wanted to do something substantial more than just a one-off. And I mean, from his description, like, Rock and Reigns was on, and then they did the angle, and he woke up in Hawaii and just saw this all clearly, that we need to go with Cody and Reigns, but I want to shift into a heel and go that direction. And Hunter talked a little bit about that later in the press conference as well, and thinking it was crazy to think about turning Rock, but as soon as we saw it, it was the best course of action to go with. And the success of these two nights is evidence of how well this has worked. But yeah, just gave a lot of the thought. I mean, was not going to state what is next for him, but you definitely got the sense that he's going to be doing more matches.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that seemed to come off, but he wasn't going to say he's got many words.
Like a bunch of different programs already lined up.
Yeah, he's got the Smashing Machine started. He said next month. So within, very shortly, he's going to be doing the Smashing Machine. And I think that's like a two-month project or some sort. And yeah, just talked about his overall philosophy with his career. Like, he is getting up there now in age, and he is someone that does not want to just rest on past accolades, and noted the fact I could do that. I have reached a certain level where I could just do I could just get by on what I have created for myself, but I want to be creating new opportunities for myself, building things. And I thought it was a pretty good appearance here from Dwayne Johnson. If you're interested in sort of his mindset, he seemed much more open just about that fact. And then Paul Levesque was out last, and there was one question about, this is the first WrestleMania without Vince McMahon, and how that is. He did not really refer to Vince McMahon other than, like, it's a new period for WWE, constantly reiterating new. And so there was that answer. And then Brandon Thurston asked a question about Brock Lesnar, who is still under contract. They stated that there were discussions about him for the Royal Rumble, and Brock is at home being Brock. He's still under contract, and that was all he was going to say. He was not... I think what we got is confirmation he was going to come back at the Rumble. We know he's under contract now. I mean, that was, you know, something that, I mean, he's said nothing about Brock on the record yet. And the fact that it was not a dismissal of, we're not going to see Brock. And if anything, I think he was deferential to Brock. I think, like, I heard that answer as someone that when the heat dies down, which over time, it typically does for a lot of people in these positions, that they will be in the Brock Lesnar business.
Sure. Well, we'll see. Like, I feel like every even mention of him is, whether or not intentional, a temperature check. And I haven't seen any of the sort of
what discussion. Would be the reaction if he, like, just hypothetically, like a Raw on Monday, that crowd.
He won't get booed.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
Yeah. All right. Anything else to touch on for WrestleMania ahead of night two?
That's it.
Okay. So a lot of people in the chat room were asking. Now let's go to, first of all, thank you for, holy cow, a lot of people are still up here right now, 3 a.m., 3:33 a.m. watching and talking to us. Let's go to some super chats and, of course, including some questions that about a very topical late breaking news story that I think a lot of you guys might be interested in. First of all, here, John Taylor sends $20 for the coffee fund tomorrow. Thank you so much, John. That'll probably caffeinate.
Wayne and I are going out to party as soon as we're done this show.
Oh, please. Yes. You don't want to know how we're going to spend these $20, but thank you so much, John Taylor, for your years of support for us at this point. Thank you so much. Jake from the Windy City has been a YouTube member for 15 months. Thank you for that support, Jake. He says, good morning. Watching you both on that one tab and Janela's clusterfuck at another.
Perfect combo.
It's been nonstop for an hour and a half now. FFS. Yeah. The clusterfuck is an annual tradition of and a test of endurance for many after hours of WrestleMania.
The participants and the viewers.
Hope you're enjoying that. Okay, Evan sent $5 saying, last July, my wife, toddler, and I went to a soccer game at the Lincoln Ford Field. Stadium was 2/3 full and took us over an hour to get out. Absolutely terrible setup. Yes, we are definitely learning that right now. Okay, now this is the question that I think a lot of you guys want us to discuss. Omar sends $5. Apparently, AEW will be releasing the actual footage of the Punk Jungle Boy Wembley altercation on Dynamite this Wednesday. This was, of course, announced on Collision today. And the talk of the car, I suppose, as we were driving back home. The Young Bucks to present backstage footage from AEW All In on the April 10th edition of Dynamite this coming Wednesday. This is a graphic that was shown and sent out at this point. So since this has come out, we've had reports from Sean Rossap, who has, at least through his sources, indicated that this is very likely not just a troll job, but something that they will actually deliver. What are your thoughts?
Well, I try to be open-minded until I see something actually presented. I look at this, I just don't know how this is. It's an extremely questionable promotional tactic that, to me, they're coming off two. I mean, you can look at it in the sense of like their cable ranking, that is a respectable finish, but these are two bad numbers by Dynamite standards that they're coming off of. And
is that any excuse? Like, to, I mean, yeah, I don't know.
If you're just like, is this anything more than the total definition of hotshotting something, that to spike a number for a week?
Yeah.
To me, is this never ending cloud that is CM Punk over this company, that, you know, he does this interview and it's back into full view. And now you can look at last week as AEW were the bystanders, as Punk does this interview and you're trashed in the process and you're collateral damage because Punk did the interview you knew he was going to do at some point. This is, you are actively courting this now, and this is however they want to view it as. I just feel it is now, you are putting, it's like I'm watching AEW and you're telling me CM Punk is still the main character of our show, but he's not part of our show anymore. He's part of the other company, and we just cannot get away from this guy. And one of the first things I thought of was Adam Copeland's speech at the beginning of Wednesday, and how you would feel the next week we're doing this, that just feels like such a desperate tactic for attention that at best you'll pivot this to a FTR match in the tag title tournament. And like, what for? Yeah. Like, we're going to air footage of CM Punk and Jack Perry, like two people that we are not, one who is gone from our company and the other who is not even on our programming at the moment. I don't know. I feel this.
Yeah,
this feels very WCW.
They could have let me just kind of put it out there, that they could have just a great idea of how they could blend something like this into storyline. Now, like, when we all first saw the graphic, we thought, okay, they're gonna, like, you know, show some something fake, like that they're gonna tease this Punk footage, and instead it'll be like something ridiculous that will directly lead to their next program on screen. These reports coming out that this is actually going to be the real footage, is, it was hard to believe. It was hard to believe for me because I like, people could probably like predict my reaction, because I thought even Adam Copeland referencing the CM Punk interview was
too
unnecessary.
Much. Yeah.
And even that was too much. Instead, they go to this.
Oh, we'll show you waiting.
Yeah, they're going to this length to just continue.
This is Eric Bischoff as the tide is turning in 98, challenging Vince McMahon to show up and fight him on a pay-per-view.
They're continuing to announce to the world that we are number two, and we cannot stop obsessing over the girlfriend who left us. You know, it's sad, even as a promotional tactic, even if they have the most brilliant storyline idea, the fact that they're even using like this, something like this to try to garner interest on Wednesday, it feels really cheap to me. Yes, I know they're heels. Yes, I know they're just kind of these sort of cheesy executive types, but I just, I think this is extremely questionable, just even as a PR move alone for AEW to rely on.
Yeah, I think it is one of those instances as well, where I think it does breed bad faith, in that, you know, Tony Khan, to whether you want to defend his public tactics or not, just will not speak when CM Punk is brought up. It was brought up on the media call on Thursday. I cannot talk about CM Punk, but in this instance, when there's value to be had, then we're all in on showing security footage of CM Punk. I don't know. I will watch it on Wednesday and give my honest assessment that night when we do the review. Mm-hmm. But
we could love it. We could be coming out on here on Wednesday and be like, that was brilliant.
Yeah.
It was the best thing I've ever seen.
As I'm like, you know, just in my head, how is this portrayed brilliantly? I'm not coming up with too many scenarios in mind. So it does feel like a really just low-hanging fruit tactic of something that, okay, we can pop a number for a week out of this, hopefully. Mm-hmm. Like, is Like, would that be stunning if like this does not even like garner the kind of spike that you would think? Like,
that would be concerning. I mean, I would suggest like focusing on building your characters.
Like, this is an ultimate hotshot. Like, if this does a number, great. It's like you're gonna do a week's number, and then what? Do you have more footage to show the next week? It's it's very strange promotional tactic.
So more on that on Wednesday. Let's continue here with some of these super chats. We go to Eric, who sent $5 just to support. Thank you very much for that, Eric. Unless you might have sent a sticker, which unfortunately I can't see within StreamYard, but thank you for that support. Jake from the Windy City sends $2 to say Cheetahn is the most overworker of the weekend. I will definitely say one of the standout performers. That Cheetahn versus Dan the Dad match was definitely
one. We did watch it.
I heard quite a bit of buzz about, and I'm very familiar with Cheetahn just from like I think being a viral sensation in Japan, and I didn't expect this sort of crossover to professional wrestling, but I watched it once by myself and then once kind of in the background with you, and I actually thoroughly enjoyed it. Same with Dan the Dad, who I thought was a lot of fun as well. Last one here, super chat comes to us from Allison. I actually have no idea what you're asking about, so I can't even really maybe give you an answer or even choose to read it because it just makes no sense.
Yeah.
So, but thank you for the support.
Otherwise. Okay. Last thing, let's just quickly go over the matches for night two, and then we're going to sign off. Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes, Bloodline Rules for the Undisputed Championship. Io Sky against Bayley for the Women's Championship.
Yeah, let's go through this order of the graphics, so if you don't mind. So by the way, Dave leaked a match order several days ago, and it actually turned out to be the match order. So there's a good chance this is actually the match order for tomorrow as well. Starting things off here with Seth Rollins versus Drew McIntyre. Then we've got the Pride, Bobby Lashley, and the Street Profits taking on the Prophecy,
the Final Testament.
Oh, whatever. One of those stupid names, the Final Prophecy Testament. Then we've got that of course is a street fight.
Yes, Philadelphia
street fight. Then we've got LA Knight versus AJ Styles. Then we've got Kevin Owens, Logan Paul, and Randy Orton for the IC Championship. We've got Io Sky versus Bayley, possibly in the semi-main event. And in the main event, Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns, now we know as Bloodline Rules.
Yes. All right. So we will be back on Sunday night, hopefully, at some hour. And if you are in Philadelphia, we are going to be at Drinker's Pub on Sunday at 2:30 p.m. We're going to be there from 2:30 to 4:30, just hanging out. It's very casual. No tickets to buy, no admission. Just show up, have a drink with us, and we're going to be hanging out there before we head on over. me to the stadium and Waze going home.
I'm going
so
home.
So maybe Waze is going to hang out at a Drinker's Pub all day.
Oh, yes, maybe.
So,
maybe.
Come hang out with us. We hope to see you there. And a big thank you to anyone that has said hello while we've been in Philadelphia. We have run into so many listeners, and thanks very much, whether you are fans, rappers that have congregated to find Wei Ting.
Yeah, no, it's been wonderful. Just even in the limited interactions we've had just with a bunch of different wrestling fans, some of them recognizing us and otherwise just being really friendly and cool. You know, this is our one chance out of the entire year where we get to meet listeners from all around the world.
Yeah, so that's been a great part of this trip. And again, a thank you to all the help we've had on the site. Andrew Thompson working super hard all throughout WrestleMania. Jack Winon, John Kleinchester, John Pine, and the bonus shows that we have had up at postwrestlingcafe.com, which is the way if you want to support post wrestling, it allows us to do coverage like this in person. We've had show reviews from WH Park, Rich Fan, John Cena. We've had myself and Wei.
We've had a fucking horror story about WH and Rich Fan's escape from the worst hotel in the world, which is really the highlight of their Stardom review. I mean, as much as I want to hear their takes on Stardom, I also want to hear about their trip itself.
Yes. So, and and Brandon Davey will have a Stand and Deliver review, which we got to watch Stand and Deliver as well.
I didn't, but you did.
Well, I watched the show, but they will have that coming your way on Sunday. But that's it for us. Thanks for everyone for staying up super late for us as it's nearly 4 a.m. The night is just starting. I'm going to sleep. Good night.